Hi, Lax Coach Mike here, laxcoachmike.com. Thanks so much for joining us on another podcast. Little deviation today. We're featuring the A-Train, Anthony Kelly. Yes, he was a high school coach, and he's an assistant coach at Ohio State, but one of the premier face-off guys in the pro game today. Gave a great message at the recent IMLCA conference featuring some unique drills for face-off guys. And if you're like me, we're always looking for new ideas for our face-off guys. He's also currently a member of the U.S. National Indoor Lacrosse Team. Just a great guy, and shares some of these drills and techniques that I'm sure will make all of us better coaches. And if we win face-offs, we're going to win more games, man. I hope you enjoy.
Hey, Lax Coach Mike here. Thanks so much for joining us on another podcast on laxcoachmike.com. We're taking a small deviation, if you will, here. I'm really excited. Got to hear Anthony Kelly at the IMLCA, one of the nation's top face-off guy, and just recently took an assistant coach job at Ohio State. If you're familiar with the pro game, indoor or outdoor, you certainly know who this guy is. And I think all of us as coaches, unless we've got a guy that is a true specialist in some of these niches, we struggle, and I can't wait to share some of the great information that I've got written down here from hearing Anthony speak, and we want to share it with you. Anthony Kelly, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thank you.
So I call you like the A-Train here, is that what I do, or how does that work, man?
Yeah, hey, whatever works for you.
Oh, man. Hey, listen, I was just blown away by the presentation that you did, and before we get into some of those niche specifics, we've got all these esteemed coaches on the website, but we don't have guys that have recently come out of the game. And let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Do you see the college players today and the game of lacrosse today differently than maybe those of us that are a little grayer in the hair saw it years ago? And if so, what do you see as kind of the changing values of players and maybe the changing philosophies of how lacrosse is played?
Yeah, I think the game's come a long way. I think I have a lot to learn from those guys, but I think a lot of times, it's important to kind of stay with the way that the game's changing. And I know that there's a lot of college coaches out there that kind of look down and kind of frown upon the way that the MLL's, played and the different rules, involved there. But after kind of playing the normal rules of college and, growing up and playing high school and all that kind of stuff and then going on to the MLL, I really love the aspect of having the shot clock there, which really speeds up the pace of the game and, brings a lot more momentum and kind of takes away from all the specialty positions, that I think have developed in the college game now. And I'm a big fan of the two-point line. I know a lot of guys think I'm crazy to say that, maybe baby steps, at first, but I think a shot clock would definitely be beneficial in the college game, and I think it would just, really increase the pace and make it more of an exciting game to kind of watch and to play, ultimately, which I think is important. But, overall, I don't think the game's changed that much. Again, I think just kind of the speed of the game and it's becoming more and more specialized, I think, ultimately, is what it's come down to. And I think because it's become so specialized, it slows the tempo of the game down. The substitution game is happening all the time throughout the course of a game. Every time that there's a turnover, you're subbing off all your D guys and you're bringing on all the O guys and vice versa. So I think in that regard, it's slowed down. When you look back and, I love pulling out some old game tapes, pulling out the old VHS of the old games back in the late 80s, 90s, and watching those games being played and just the run and gun and the up and down. And, you got everybody pushing transition and, middies going up and down and back and forth. And, I think it's just exciting. Who's to say what's better or worse? I don't know. I think the skill level has definitely improved. And, I think a lot of it's just the way that the game has evolved and the progress that we've made with equipment and everything else. So
coming from a guy that was a great college player not that long ago, what are the things about the way coaches lay out a practice that are more attractive or less attractive from a player's perspective? Speed of the practice, the amount of drills, the time you spend on a drill, so on and so forth.
Sure, I think it just depends on what your philosophies are and kind of what you want to accomplish ultimately, and then I think a lot of it depends on where you are in your season. I think obviously your practices are going to be quite a bit different, what you're running in the fall as compared to what you're going to be doing you know, so let's say middle to late season come springtime, you know, obviously it's going to be quite a bit different. You know, things were always very organized. You know, I was fortunate enough to play for Coach Bresci, and I think he did an awesome job when I was there. He's a great, great coach and a great guy that I learned a ton from. You know, and Coach Stalford, Jay Stalford, was an assistant at the time, and he was just ultra organized, and he was great. You know, always had things on point for us and had great practice plans put together and, you know, great scout reports and all that stuff, very, very detailed. You know, and they would always post the practice plan in the locker room so that, you know, all the players were aware prior to practice on what we were going to do. You know, one thing that we do now at Ohio State, you know, we don't actually post the practice plan. You know, Coach Myers just likes to make it go, 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 make sure that all the coaches are very organized and on point and on the same page so that, you know, when a drill ends, we just, boom, move immediately into the next drill. And actually something that we've incorporated now into our practices, which I think is helped us a ton, you know, and it's really upped the tempo of our practice. We actually have the scoreboard. We're fortunate enough, obviously, at Ohio State, we have the indoor facility, which is pretty nice this time of year. So we're not out braving the snow. We're actually inside, which is a big plus for us. But we actually will put times up on the scoreboard. So for each drill, like let's say we're doing one drill for 10 minutes, we'll actually put 10 minutes on the clock. And, you know, boom, it's running at both ends of the field. You know, the players are very aware of how much time is left in the drill. The coaches are aware. And when that horn sounds, it's just immediately, boom, you know, transition to the next drill. We'll put up 15 minutes or, you know, 20 minutes or whatever it may be, you know, for that section of the drill. And I think it just holds the guys accountable and it really picks up that intensity level, you know, and allows us to kind of harp on the guys when we're going through and doing stick work. You know, hey, get, you know, 30 seconds, you know, get two more, get one more, you know, whatever it may be. And really driving the tempo and pace. So,
oh man, I think that's a really cool idea.
Yeah, that's something I found it really beneficial, and I know the guys like it. But again, it just keeps the tempo upbeat. You know what I mean? And it just it's very, very intense. So it's something I would definitely you know, recommend, and it's something that Coach Myers decided to add to the mix. And I think he did a great job with it.
Hey, what's your favorite drill at Ohio State?
Favorite drill, man. I tell you what, we got Coach Dave Dobbins came over from Salisbury and kind of brought some of the philosophies there that they use over there. And you know, it was pretty interesting hearing Coach Berkman talk over this past weekend at the Ohio State High School Coaches Clinic, talking about his kind of philosophy of, you know, trying to get as many touches for each player throughout the course of practice. You know, as many touches as they can get and as many reps as they can get. He just drives that. And Dave kind of brought that whole philosophy over. And you know, he's brought a bunch of drills over for us to do. And we do a transition drill. I don't know what they call it there. We call it the seagull drill, you know, where the guys are – it's more of a transition drill and just kind of alternating the way the game's played. You know, it'll be a fast break going one way, and then it'll immediately come back. And we'll kind of set two guys down in our clear. So coming back the other way, it'll be a 5-on-4 off the clear. And then we'll come back the other way. So it'll be a 6-on-5, right. And then we'll send a long stick midi, you know, kind of transitioning in. But just kind of the way we set it up, it's a little tweak in there and a little change. Yeah, that's one I really like. Yeah, it's tough to say, getting put on the spot there. No, I just like I like the up-tempo drills. I like the stuff where we can kind of hold the guys accountable.
Yeah, we talk on the air all the time, you know. Sure. We're now encouraging coaches to track touches in their practice plans as well as drawing their drills out to the minute.
Sure.
And,
sure.
You know, we're trying to get 200 touches per player in the first hour.
Yep.
And we get a lot of emails and blogs back on the site about guys that have adopted, you know, I mean, there's a lot of coaches that do it. I happen to learn it from Berkman, too. But it just makes a big, big difference, you know. And it's funny, you know, you see the developing players, you know, grow from being able to throw and catch with their left hand to making their left hand a shooting weapon.
Absolutely.
Just by the amount of touches they get in those constant movement shooting drills that they have, you know?
No, it's great. It's great. You know, and another one we do is, you know, we'll take, you know, we'll pull out three cages and we'll run just right after another, you know, boom, boom, boom. We'll go, you know, three balls. We'll do, you know, 3-on-2s for a while, you know, three different cages. They'll all be going simultaneously. So, you know, guys aren't waiting around. They're not waiting in line. Split the team into thirds and basically it's just go and you go three in a row. So, I'll roll the ball out, we'll go 3-on-2, they either shot, you know, shoot it, or, you know, defense takes it away, and then immediately blow a whistle, roll another ball in. So each group will go three in a row, and then boom, blow the whistle. Goalie, you know, I'll throw one more pass to the goalie. Defense has to clear it. You know, send in another group of guys. You know, we'll progress all the way through to 4-on-3 and 5-on-4. You know, that's just a great up-tempo, you know, not a lot of waiting around and just getting a ton of reps, ton of touches, gets everybody communicating, moving. You know, that's one thing that we do at the start of practice a lot to just really jump right into it and get the energy up. And, you know, again, going back to getting all those touches and repetitions, you know, and just banging through it. So it's another one of my favorites.
Anthony, you know, clearly your track record on the you know, on the face-off side is huge, and I really want to now, you know, kind of get in and hopefully help some of our coaches with the with some ways that, you know, we have another article on the site. This timeout too late. You know, you can't coach from the sidelines. You got to coach in practice. You know,
sure.
And the reps and everything are what make them different. And I guess I'm one of those old school guys, you know, where we do some popovers and we would do some clamps maybe before a game or, you know, for 10 minutes in practice. But the position and the coaching of the niche of face-offs is, you know, clearly the one thing I took away from hearing you speak was how incredibly ignorant I was about how we can put our players in a better position to be successful. You know, I'm kind of the school that it's hard to define what makes a face-off guy. Why don't you comment on that?
Yeah, it's...
I mean, we see small, quick guys. We see big, strong guys like you that are also quick. I mean, I don't really... I'm not sure I can say there's a formula.
No, I don't think that there is, to be honest with you. I mean, everybody kind of looks at me and, you know, people that don't know me, and I mean, most of the time the first thing out of their mouth is, oh, you play defense. And it's like, no, you know, actually, I'm a midfielder. And you know, then you see other guys that you know, are pretty tiny and vice versa. And you know, I don't think there is a set, you know, breakdown of what makes a great face-off guy. And I think that's what's kind of interesting about our just game in general. You know, you have guys that can be successful at every position and be every shape and size, you know, which is, you know, unlike football and unlike some of these other sports out there. But, yeah, I mean, to say who it is, I don't know. I think ultimately, you know, you just got to – get in the mix and find that guy, you know, and yeah, I mean, talking about myself, I wasn't recruited as a face-off guy. I was actually an offensive middie growing up and all through high school. And I would take the occasional face-off just to kind of stay on the field. We didn't really have a face-off guy, you know, and my coach would just say, hey, take this face-off. And I never really thought too much about it. You know, and that's just kind of the nature of, you know, growing up in Cleveland, Ohio back, you know, when the game's come a long way, but, you know, back then there wasn't a whole lot of coaching and direct direction and it wasn't really specialized at that point. And then when I got to college, you know, the Ohio State had graduated their face-off guy from the previous year, and we really didn't have a guy. We had recruited one in my class when I was a freshman, and, you know, he ran into some trouble with grades and whatnot and wasn't able to be a part of the team, so we had to kind of fill that void. And, you know, Coach Goers, who's now at the Naval Academy, pretty much said, hey, you know, we got to find a guy, you know, who wants to take a shot at it. And, you know, I was a freshman, was fighting for playing time. I said, hey, I'll give it a shot. So, you know, we get about 10 of us over there. And, you know, a week later, we're down to 7 of us. And then a week later, we're down to 5 of us. And then a week later, we're down to, you know, 3 or 4 of us. And from there, he just kind of took us and, you know, we taught us and kind of went through it. And, you know, by the end, come season, you know, it just turned out that I was the guy. And, you know, I had a lot to learn. And, you know, I pretty much owe everything to Coach Goers. He was a great mentor and a great teacher. And you know, I just looked at it as an opportunity. And it was something that I wanted. And, you know, I just worked and worked and put a lot of extra time in on my own. And next thing you know, now I'm a face-off guy, you know. So,
Anthony, I'm a high school coach, okay? And, you know, I've only got and just for our listeners so they know, Anthony coached at Hilliard High School in Columbus, Ohio, so he brings that reference of understanding the difference between a college staff and a high school staff. So I'm a high school coach, and, you know, I've got one or two assistant coaches that are basically guys that are there to help me out and keep things moving.
Sure.
My face-off guy graduated. I got a game, you know, the high school season is a little different. Most of us get, you know, 2 weeks, literally 2 weeks to prepare for the first game. I've got a couple kids interested, I really don't have the logistics where I can take 20 minutes before or after a practice and work with 10 guys to find my face-off guy. How do I find my face-off guy from a high school coach's perspective?
Yeah, you know, it's tough. I mean, again, you're going to have to find a guy that wants to be there, right? If a kid doesn't want to be there, he's not going to put the time in. He's not going to, you know, he's not going to work hard at it if he doesn't want to be that guy. You know, what's great in the high school ranks, you know, is that you can probably have two or three of those guys, hopefully, you know, and be able to kind of rotate them through, unless you want to find that specialty player, you know. And again, that's going to be a decision that you need to make as a coach. And, you know, a lot of it will be based upon how many players you have, you know, obviously to choose from. You know, if you're going to have guys doing multiple positions and multiple roles. But, you know, I mean, things I used to look for, you know, I think wrestlers make great face-off guys. You know, that they're great body control, body awareness, you know, very good at and comfortable kind of being down in that position. And, you know, they're normally pretty tough kids. I would always look, you know, I want kids that are tough, you know, tough and hard-nosed, that they're going to want that ground ball. You know, even if a kid's not a great face-off guy, if he's going to give you everything he has when he's out there and be fighting for that ball and scrapping and giving you a chance, you know, at the high school level, a lot of times that's going to be good enough for you. You know, a kid that's just going to be a one-on-one, is he going to win that one-on-one matchup? You know, and, you know, I think a lot of that can identify itself just in your day-to-day practice, you know, and during your ground ball drills and that kind of stuff.
Anthony, is it fair to say that a quality face-off guy in high school may not even be in your top six or seven stick handlers, but he can go after ground balls?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, that's what I tell kids. You know, I constantly tell kids all the time. I say, hey, you know, if you're, you know, in eighth grade going into your freshman year of high school, or you are a freshman or going into your sophomore year and you're trying to break that varsity squad, you know, hey, you know, challenge yourself, you know. And I think coaches need to kind of look at that and look for that guy that may be able to fill that void for him. You know, he might not be the best guy on his team, and maybe you don't even think about him. I mean, when I was a high school coach, I took an attackman and made him a face-off guy. You know, he was just he was a tough kid. He just brought that, you know, tenacity and energy, and he wasn't going to be a significant role player on the offensive end of the field, you know, as a fifth or sixth attackman. But you know what? He ended up being our starting face-off guy. He did a great job. You know, so I think a lot of times you can look and try to identify, and maybe, you know, I think a lot of coaches need to, you know, if you give a kid a new role and pump them up a little bit, a lot of times they're going to take that and run with it. You know, and really bring something else to your team, and they'll really be able to help you out there. And in turn, you're really helping that kid out.
Well, and, you know, I think integrating face-offs into some of your transition drills is not as difficult as, or not a big a challenge as maybe coaches, if you're out there coaching by yourself. You know,
sure.
Even saying whichever guy gets the face-off is going to initiate, you know, the 4v3, or if you're not working on wing play or whatever it turns out to be. Like I said, I've been coaching a long time, and a lot of times the guy that became the face-off guy surprises me.
Yep.
You know, but the common denominators that you said are absolutely correct. So we got, you know, I mean, we blow the whistle and we do some clamp drills and popovers and stuff like that. There were five drills that you talked about at IMLCA that I was just kind of blown away with, and I'm going to try and get some pictures on the website. If we can't emulate it with video, we want to get this up as soon as we can. At least we'll get it with some still photos, if you don't mind, Anthony, if I give
sure.
you credit and Rob's from some of that.
Yeah,
but I'd like to run through these
sure.
at least verbally with you so our coaches know it. And coaches, we'll get some stuff on the website where you can just print this out instead of, you know, trying to write it down if you're driving in your car or listening on your computer. The first was this little back-to-back drill. Tell us how that works, Anthony.
Yeah, basically this is what we do. It's a good warm-up drill and just kind of gets you guys going. And basically the mindset here is to work on the guys getting low, you know, body control, really getting these legs driving. And ultimately it helps our guys work on picking up a ball in tight spaces, which, you know, as we all know, the face-off guys, once, you know, the wings come into play and everything else, they need to be good at being able to pick that ball up in a tight space and being able to get out of traffic. So this is one that we set up. Basically, the guys go back-to-back, straddling a line. So the line will go, you know, right down the middle of the two players. They'll put their backs parallel with the line back-to-back, and there's going to be a ball right on that line. And when the whistle blows, the objective here is to drop your butt, and you want to try to back the opposing player up. And the rule is that you need to get both of your toes behind the line before you're allowed to pick that ball up. So you need to drop your hips, you know, get those legs chopping, 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 back that guy up, and then once your feet cross that line, you can pick that ball up and get it out. So we just do that. We do a lot of reps there, and again, that's a great warm-up drill to kind of get the guys going, and you know, guys seem to enjoy it.
It almost looked like a reverse tug-of-war.
Yeah, basically. It's exactly.
I mean, it's probably a really bad metaphor, you know, but...
It makes perfect sense. So, yeah, I mean, that's exactly what it is, and it's a hard, hard drill, especially if you get guys that are about the same size, you know, to really drive back, and you got to make sure you tell the guys they're not allowed to move and let that guy go flopping on his butt. So you got to stay in the fight and keep driving, because the high school kids especially, they try to take a step forward and let that guy fall down and pick the ball up. So you got to make sure that you let them know that.
This next drill I just loved. You called it the butt end war, if I got it right.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Hey, you got him impressed, man. I did my research.
Yeah.
So I'm hard to impress, you know, but you blew me away. So let's talk about butt end wars. This is our next face-off drill.
Yeah, this is one of my favorites as a player, and this is one I love to, you know, when I'm healthy, I'm getting over an injury here, but when I'm healthy, I love to strap up and buckle up and get in there with my face-off guys and work with them. And this is a personal favorite of mine. So what we do here is I have the guys actually flip their sticks over. So they're going to flip their sticks around. So they're going to put the head of their stick down where their butt end normally is. And they're going to have their butt end up at the top of the where their hands are. And you're going to grab the stick just as you would for a normal face-off, but now you're holding your butt end there. And what you want to do is you need to think about having an imaginary head of your stick coming off that butt end. And the reason that I say that is when you go down, you're going to come down and approach the ball just like a normal face-off. But you want to leave about 4 inches or so from where your butt end is on the ground to where the ball is. So you want to, again, imagine that there's a fake or, you know, imaginary face-off head there, or I'm sorry, head of the stick, and your opposing player is going to come down in the exact same approach. So both of you guys are going to have your butt ends down by the ball. And, you know, same thing, the whistle's going to blow, so, you know, you have your down set or down whistle, whatever rules you're playing by. And the guys are basically going to jam across. They're going to drive their hands across, stay nice and low, and fire across. And most likely they're going to meet their hands and their shafts are going to kind of meet above the ball because there's no head of the stick now. So the shafts and they're going to kind of drive and fight for, you know, taking space on that ball. So they're going to fight and try to drive and you know, work for either body position on the ball, hand position on the ball, or using their shaft to kind of pull that ball out behind them. The rules that we do have is that they're not allowed to take a quick rake with their butt end and just sweep that ball out. It's not really helping anybody. It's not realistic. And the whole objective here is just to work on their timing, you know, their toughness. It gets them staying low. And ultimately, this is one of my favorites because it gets the guys thinking and working because they can't use the head of their stick to get the ball out, so they need to come up with another way to work it out. So a lot of times, you know, again, working on that body control and body awareness, and ultimately, it's a great counter drill. I'm a big, big believer in working on counter drills, constantly working on that stuff, and what that enables your players to do is really think after that first move is done. You know, and this is one of those great drills for that. So,
in the drill, are they allowed to move it with their hands, or can I ask that question on the air, Luke?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're
I don't want to get into the A-Train proprietary tricks.
No, keep stuff
in your pocket.
Yeah, no problem at all. You know, that's one of those things. I mean, I don't teach our guys to use their hands. I mean, as much as I'd love to, you know, especially at the NCAA level, they're putting a huge, huge emphasis this year on the you know, use of hands this year, and they're actually implementing penalties for it this year. So, you know, definitely guys need to be aware of that. And, you know, it's one of those things. I mean, you know, I guess if you can get away with it, but, you know, at our level this year, they're going to be actually moving three officials up to watch the face-offs this year. So don't see a lot of hands, you know, being an issue this year. So, you know, definitely, you know, just have your guys work on using their shaft. And then what that does is when they actually flip their sticks back over normally, then they're going to be able to use the head of their stick and kind of sweep it out like a broom. So
I want to get that last 2 or 3 inches or 4 inches or whatever it is, the equivalent of the head philosophically, over the ball and then pull it out between my legs?
Yeah, that's probably your best option. The other thing is, kind of one of my philosophies, facing off is anytime you get in trouble, what I like to teach my guys is if the ball's kind of tied up, if you take your right leg and you step directly between your opponent's legs, so basically take yours and step right between his legs, you're going to kind of handcuff that guy. He's not really going to be able to do much. He's not going to be able to see the ball, and he's really not going to be able to move. So that's another thing that we work on is jamming across. And if you can't necessarily pull that ball out, we work on stepping across with our right leg and swinging our butt around into our opponent and just trying to take precedence on that space in the middle and then allow the guys to kick the ball out to space. So another big goal there to work on.
Hey, this next one I thought was really cool too. This one Anthony calls wrecking balls.
Yep.
And I think this is to build not only quickness, but awareness on exactly where the ball is and how to get it. Talk to us a little bit about your wrecking ball drill.
Sure. This is, again, you pretty much nailed it. And, it's just working on your awareness and finding that ball and working on your eye-hand coordination. This is something that Coach Goers used to do with all of us back when I was in college. And I just kind of added to it. I think that's kind of how drills kind of progress. And I think it's great, the drill that we used to do is basically you come down, you throw your stick away, so you don't even need that right now. So we're just going just hands, and I'll have the guys come down into their stance. And something else that's important to know is, I don't really have a set belief on hands. Guys are always asking, should guys have a traditional grip or a motorcycle grip? I'm somebody who's very unique, especially at my level. I actually use both. I'll alternate throughout the course of a game. I may stay one way for an entire game, and that's a whole other discussion which we could go into, kind of talking about the pluses and minuses of both. And it's just, again, my personal belief and depending on what scenario I'm in. But all of these drills, you can use a traditional grip or a motorcycle grip. I actually have the guys that I coach now, I have guys that use both grips. I have one guy that I coach that's a set moto guy, and another guy that's a traditional grip. So, what I always recommend coaches is to have your guys try them both and see what works for them and, see what they like, and you'll be shocked at how many times players will either stick with what they have or a lot of times they may switch the other way. So I just think it's important note to kind of add to all these that, you can have your players using whatever grip that they choose. So, again, didn't mean to change modes there, but coming back to the wrecking ball here, you're going to have your players approach the ball, again, without their stick. Come in, they're gonna drop down, and you want your player looking down at the ground, so he's not gonna look up at you. And I'm gonna stand actually right in front of them. So, as a coach, you're gonna stand where the opposing player would be. And what you're gonna do is you're gonna say down, blow that whistle, and the player's gonna swoop across with his right hand and low to the ground. He's actually gonna open his hand up, and he's gonna catch the ball that you're gonna drop. So far my guy's just down. Whistle, blow the whistle, he swoops his hand across, and the other thing is they're going to find it with their eyes. That's something we work on is keeping the head low. You don't want his head to immediately snap up to find that ball. Keep the head low and find it with his eyes so that as that ball's going down, swooping across and catching, we'll do about 5 reps in a row. And you'd be shocked at how much trouble guys have when you first do this drill. And within a couple sessions of doing it, probably by the fourth time of practice you do it, most of the guys will be catching 5 in a row. And it really just shows how much they're improving and working on the eye hand coordination. And it's also a great drill if you want a guy to start working on a step, coming across. We have one guy that he likes to step across when he takes a face-off. And sometimes he finds himself not doing it. So he'll actually ask me, hey, coach, can we do the wrecking balls? I need to work on my step. So something you can add there. And as I said, I kind of added to it myself, kind of my own little tweak to the drill, and I'll actually grab 2 balls. So just as I said, the first step there, the first stage, blow the whistle, they swoop across their hand, catch that ball, and then what I'll do is actually take the second ball, and I'll throw it out to a different space. So a lot of times it'll just work right out the front. So I'll take that ball, he's going to swoop across his right hand, I throw it out in front of him to his left, similar to if he were to pull a ball on a fast break off like a pinch and pop move. He's going to step out of his face-off stance, approach that ball, and make them pick it up with their left hand. So they're actually getting down and picking the ball up with their hand. So what this forces them to do is work on their body position, body control coming up and out of their stance,
and it forces them to get down on the ball and pick it up with their hand, which I really like. And again, just going back to that eye-hand coordination there.
Yeah, and Anthony, I have in my notes that you do this with tennis balls.
Yeah, I alternate. Sometimes we use tennis balls. Sometimes we use lacrosse balls. Just kind of depends. The tennis balls are much lighter. And, you know, when the players have their gloves on, they're harder to feel. So I think it's a bit more challenging to do with the tennis balls, especially when they have to run out and pick that ball up. You know, it really forces them to get down and feel that ball and grab it. You know, as we all know, they're much lighter than a lacrosse ball.
Yeah, I'm not sure our listeners know, in addition to all these other things he does, coaching-wise, Anthony is also the Midwest rep for STX. Pretty good deal by STX, I would say, knowing your reputation. But I'm just curious, man, does your boss know you're recommending people use Wilson tennis balls in drills? I mean, that doesn't sound too good.
Well, I prefer him to be using the STX lacrosse balls, but, you know, we got to make do with what we have.
All right, we'll edit it out, man. We'll edit it out.
So... but yeah, it's again, you know, it's a great one though. It gets the guys up and out, and you can work to all different positions. You know, you can throw that second ball out behind the guys. You can throw it across as if they were to lose a face off, so they have to kind of get up and step across and work on their body control there. And then sometimes they'll do it where I don't tell them where I'm going to put that second ball, so they just have to kind of react and find that ball. You know, I'm a big kind of a coaching point for the guys. You know, it's always, you know, find the ball, find the ball, find the ball. You know, if they don't know where it is, so it's immediately, you know, get that head on a swivel. You know, kind of we use that terminology a lot down on defense. Well, the same thing applies on the face-off. If you don't know where it is, find it. You know, get that head working and get your body working.
Yeah, and for the coaches, so we basically got one player at a time, right? This is not two players. One player at a time, going down in his face-off stance, and then we're going to run five reps with that player, then bring the next guy in.
Yep, exactly. So I just kind of rotate through. And again, when I use two balls, it's just one rep. So, you know, when I do that first stage where it's just the one ball, I'm dropping it, I'll do five in a row. He catches it, lobs it back up to me. We'll do five in a row with that. And then, as I said, when we had that second ball, because that player's getting up and out of his stance, I'll just kind of rotate through it. I'll just sit there with a bucket of balls and just have the guys go through.
All right, man. Listen, I want to do one more, and then I want to talk about wing play a little bit before we let you go.
Sure.
This one I have is grab and go. And
yep.
You must have stressed it, because in my notes I've got in capital letters, left-handed, left-handed, left-handed. So talk to us about the grab and go drill for your face-off guys.
Yeah, this is one I actually made up for my guys. You know, I have a young face-off guy who's a freshman this year at Ohio State. Great, great skill. Struggles sometimes picking up that ground ball. And he was getting very, very frustrated, you know, kind of going through. He'd win that face off, and then he would just overrun that ground ball, you know, and nothing's worse than that. So I was like, all right, we got to get something to get his confidence up and get him working here. So I came up with this drill. I just call it grab and go. You know, you guys feel free to call it whatever you want. Couldn't really come up with a great name for it. Basically, he's a pinch and pop kind of guy going out the front. But again, all these drills, doesn't matter what move you do or what you're trying to do there. You know, they all apply. So basically have him go through his motion on the whistle. Boom, he's going just by himself. So there's only one player here at a time. He's going to pull that ball out in front of him or, you know, do his move. So for instance, he's going to do a pinch and pop, pull the ball out in front of him. He's immediately going to drop his stick, and he's going to run and grab that ball with his left hand, as you said. And I think probably the reason you have that highlighted is during the talk, a lot of coaches were saying, you know, how you choose, do you want him to use the right hand or left hand, or, you know, which hand do you tell your guys to pick up those ground balls with? And, you know, what I always tell the face-off guys to do is use their left hand. Most of the time, coming off a face-off, the guys are already going to have that stick in their right hand to pick that ground ball up right-handed. So a lot of times they overrun it because they're not getting their butt down and they're taking their stick too straight up and down. So as we all know, if you're going for a ground ball right-handed, your left hand is going to be the one that's on the butt end and up high. So my belief there is that if you force the guy to get down with his left hand to pick that ball up in practice without the stick, then hopefully that'll translate over to him getting that butt end down as he's picking that ball up.
Yeah, a couple of questions for you, Coach. We do this with one player at a time. We actually go through the down set or depending federation, and we blow the whistle. He does his face-off move, and then he drops the stick, but it's one player at a time?
Yep, one player at a time. You can do multiple players at a time if you want. You know,
you could line guys up like 7 yards apart or something, couldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. You can line them all up and blow it through and then just get a ton of reps that way. You know, we'll do that too. So It just depends on what you're trying to do and how many guys you have. But, yeah, you can absolutely do, you know, multiple guys at once.
You know, one of the ideas I might play with is just with your regular team doing some of these in-tight ground ball drills, have them drop a stick. I mean, I love that philosophy of the left hand traditionally being high. Forcing them to pick up the ball with the left hand glove just necessitates that they get far lower.
Yeah, I do it all the time. I'm a big believer in that translating over and eye-hand coordination, just carrying over into what you do. So a lot of what I do, I try to incorporate that stuff with the no-stick ground balls.
Yeah, you're a pretty smart guy.
Well, yeah, I'm a phys ed guy, so I had a lot of classes on that stuff. So I just try to adjust and keep adding to it. You know, I'm a big believer in progression. I'm progressing through the guys. And, I'm kind of my philosophy is progress with your drills and keep adding as the season kind of goes, you know, and continue to challenge the players.
You know, I think even if we get a progressive coach that has the time in a practice to focus some specialty time, just like you would man up or man down, you know, on faceoffs, we still have a tendency to focus on the faceoff guy itself. And for most of us that are coaches, you know, our philosophy of wing play is if we're getting killed, go to the defensive end.
Yeah.
You know? And that's about the extent of my deep philosophy on wing play. In your session at IMLCA, you talked about where the guys actually position themselves and what their first move should be. And another thing is, you know, on our travel teams, we're blessed to have some great face-off guys. You know, I really see the face-off guys kind of quarterbacking the wing play, and as the game progresses or they're adjusting their moves, you know, obviously they got to work in concert. Talk a little bit about the wing play.
Yeah, you know, I think it's, I think wing play is a huge, huge avenue for you to really highlight and you know, either really take advantage of a great face-off guy that you have on your team, or you know, you can use wing play to isolate the opposing team. You know, maybe you don't have a great face-off guy going into that game, and you kind of know that. You know, maybe you're not going to win that face-off, but you can really use the wing play to kind of isolate that and contain that guy and, you know, really keep him from being a threat. I mean, nothing's worse than, you know, as we all know, you know, when you're giving that ball up over and over and over again, every single face-off, you just know you're going to lose it, right? It kind of takes the air out of your team. And it's even worse if that guy's picking up a fast break every time and running down and, you know, giving your team opportunities. So, you know, there's a lot of different ways. And you know, again, none of this stuff I don't think is, you know, am I saying that this is Bible? You know, these are just things that I believe in and things that I've found to be beneficial and kind of work with. You know, so kind of where I'm going to tailor off here is these are things that I kind of teach our guys, and this is something that we believe in at Ohio State and kind of work with, and it's something that I also use as a player still. You know, yeah, definitely, you know, where you go and you're asking me kind of your approach and kind of role. You know, one thing that we work on, you know, just going back to the basics, I guess, is when you're approaching on the line. So when these wing players line up on the line, you know, if you're in a scenario where you're directly right next to an opposing player on the wing, something I teach my guys is that always have your inside foot, meaning the foot that's closest to your opposing player. So let's say I have a player on my right. So let's say, Mike, you're on my right. I'm on the left side. You know, ready to break in on the wing here. I'm going to have my right foot back, and I'm going to have my left foot right up on that line. And when that whistle blows, what I teach the guys to do is take that right foot and immediately step across your line, so your path that you're going to take, your approach on the ball, and also kind of hook them with your stick a little bit. So what I teach the guys is step in front, try to hook and drive back, and immediately try to get that one step in front of you, which now, you know, I'm going to have a better approach on that ball. So whichever direction that ball is going to squirt to, you know, hopefully I have that one half step on you, which is going to allow me to go there and pick that ball up. So I think that's kind of something that's important to note there. You know, another thing that we kind of stress on our guys.
Let me interrupt you 1 second.
Yeah, no, go ahead, please.
I'm sitting here talking to you on this podcast, and I got my feet moving under the desk, you know.
Okay, sure. I don't want to – it's hard verbal.
Like anybody would ever use me as a wing guy, you know.
Well.
That's my time in the 40s, about a month and a half. Anyway, you know, the if the player is on my right, so now I want to drop my right foot 4 inches or 5 inches back so that I'm really stressing that my first step is with my right foot.
Yep, so yeah, exactly. And you want to take that foot and try to step in front of that guy that's next to you.
Yeah, so you're an athlete. Where's my weight?
I mean, just kind of position equally, you know what I mean? Nothing crazy. I mean, obviously a little bit on that front foot so that your right foot's ready to move and react. You know, you don't want to have all your weight on that back foot. You're not going to be able to pick it up and move it, you know? So a nice athletic lean up there on that front foot and just ready to move and react across. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah, is there ever a time when we want our pole outside of their pole?
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, you know, that's a whole other scenario kind of on the position on where you want your guys. And I think that's another thing that I stress, you know, and you know, make a point to kind of talk about that at the convention. You know, a lot of it goes to your game plan. So what your game plan is as a coach and, you know, at the high school ranks, it's obviously a bit different. But if you do have that ability to be able to watch some film and be able to scout and or maybe play a team multiple times throughout the course of the season, you know, maybe you're able to take some notes and have an idea of where that guy's trying to go and what he's trying to do. And hopefully you can have a pregame game plan with your players and kind of have them set on certain spots on the line. You know, I know, now coaching at the college ranks, you know, we'll always have a game plan going into our game. Guys kind of know what their expectations are, what their role is, and kind of where they're supposed to be positioned on the line. Now, if you don't have that ability, then again, it goes back to what you mentioned before, letting your face-off guy kind of be the quarterback out there of those three guys and let him put his guys in position. But again, that's important for those guys to be able to communicate, you know, and kind of talk through that. So I think ultimately it just goes to where you want those guys on the line, depending upon, you know, what your game plan is and what your objective is for each of those face-offs.
Yeah, let me touch on two other points that I have in my notes from your presentation. The first one was to run 5 yards straight ahead first and then go to the predetermined area.
Yep. So, again, it goes back to, you know, what our game plan is there going into that game. And what I'll teach you guys is, you know, maybe they're positioned on a line. Maybe I'll have my pole down the line and maybe there's no one even near him, right? Maybe their wing guy's all the way on the other side of the, you know, at the far end of the wing line. You know, let's not worry about him. Let's just worry about what our objective is. When that whistle blows, you know, he's in that position for a reason. You know, what we work on is taking a good, hard 2 to 3 steps. You know, maybe it's 4 or 5, depending upon where that ball squirts out. But what I teach our guys is, you know, at the college level, 2-3 hard steps. So your first objective is to get a jump off that line. And then from there, you're going to take your break or approach. You know, it's just the terminology we use there is your break onto the ball. So once that ball squirts out, you want to make your break or your move and your approach on the ball from there. So again, immediately, you know, 2-3 hard steps off, straight line, and then break on the ball depending on where it's going to squirt out to. And then I guess any questions on that before it kind of takes me to the next point here?
No, I got you, man.
Does that make sense? Okay. Just making sure this is all going to make sense for all these coaches listening here. So, again, you're making your break in, and you know, let's say now if that ball doesn't squirt out, right, so it's not a perfect world. And as we all know, you know, coaching high school kids and youth kids, how many times have we all seen that face off when, you know, those guys are locked up and it's just a complete stalemate, right? You know, the sticks are locked, the ball's not moving, nothing's happening, and you know, those guys are grinding out for 10 seconds or so. Now it's going to be a matter of, you know, where do we want our guys to go? And that's a question that coaches are always asking me. You know, where do guys go? What's their objective after that, you know, after their first 3, 4, 5, 6 steps into the play? You know, now what do you want them to do? And again, you know, goes back to, you know, what's your objective and playing with the personnel that you have on the field? You know, what kind of face-off guy do you have? Is he a guy that's going to get that ball up and out right away? Or is he a guy that kind of likes to tie it up and then use his wings? Ultimately, the terminology that we like to use is we use an over-under call. So that's the terminology we use. Over, meaning over the top of the face-off guy, and under, meaning coming behind him or underneath the face-off guy. So this is terminology that we use during practice, during our game plans, and the players also use it when they're on the field. That's their communication call. So let's say I'm facing off, taking a face-off. I get tied up. You can't pull the ball out immediately. I'll listen for my guys. They'll come into the play and they'll be screaming, you know, under, under, under. That means that he's open out the back, so I'm able to pull that ball out to him. Or you know, I'll know that I'll have a guy in position over the top of me, meaning he'll be talking to me over, over, over. You know, Anthony, pull up front, over, over, over. We're able to pull that ball out there. The other thing is it allows us to get in position and to be able to, again, going back to, you know, kind of that first, to being able to isolate that opposing player or opposing faceoff guy. So what our rules are generally on a just a general faceoff, our rule is that our pull is normally going to be the under guy, meaning he's coming in behind me. So that gives him the ability to get any ball that squirts out behind me. If the opposing player pulls it out for a fast break, then he's in position to make a play on that ball. He's also in position to stop that fast break. It gives us the ability to send our offensive wing to be over the top of me, which in turn he's actually going to be underneath the opposing player in case that ball squirts out the back of that player. He's able to make a break and make a play on that ball. You know, and again, it just goes back to that terminology and being able to communicate. And what I like to use for my guys to make sense, you know, I always like to tell them to think about a teeter-totter, you know, like the old teeter-totter in the playground. So when one guy's up, the other guy's down, and if it pivots and goes the other direction, then they got to pivot and they work in unison. So they're constantly working together, kind of like the terminology we use of being on a string, you know, on sliding. Same rules apply there. You never want your guys right next to each other. That doesn't do us any good. If both our guys are on the same side of the field or, you know, on the same side of our face-off guy, that doesn't do us much good. You know, another good point to think about is what I tell my guys is anytime a face-off guy is tied up, you know, guys are always asking me, well, how do you know where to go, coach? Like, where do I go? Where's that ball going to come out to? Well, most of the time on a tie-up, you're able to use the ability to either pull the ball out towards your butt end or directly between your legs. Those are the two places that most of the time that ball is going to squirt out. So what I tell my guys is to follow your face-off guy or the opposing guy, depending on if you're that over or under guy, follow his left leg. So get behind his left foot. And what that does is that gives you the ability to make a break to your right if the ball squirts between his legs and make a break to your left if that ball squirts out by his butt end. So it's just kind of a good rule to think about and use when you're in there. Approach that left leg. Follow his left foot. So if those guys are locked up and they're spinning around, you know, have one of you guys follow the opposing player's left foot and one of you guys follow your guy's left foot. So a couple awesome good points stuff. There. Yeah.
Awesome stuff, Coach. Last one I wanted you to comment on is sure. It seems like more and more, and I really found your comments kind of curious, and I know your opinion ahead of time, but I want to get it. You know, we see these wing players now with the looping running start.
Sure. I mean, I don't think it's necessary. I mean, I think if anything, you're doing yourself a disservice because maybe you're taking that, you know, that big run and then you don't hear that whistle and you got to slow up and, you know, or you're too early and then you're offsides. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what's the right or wrong answer. I just don't think it's necessary in my personal belief. I like to have my guys in position where they're supposed to be, ready to make that first approach and ready to make that first step. You know, what I'll tell my guys is if someone is running and they're going to come up right next to you, your first step, just immediately step right across right in that guy's line and let him run right into you. You know, and then he's going to have to slow down and you can make a nice break on that ball. You know, again, it's just going to be a personal belief and if you think it's good or if you don't like it. So it's tough to say if it works or if it doesn't work.
Well, man, hey, listen, last thing, and I'll let you go. I'm not easily impressed, man, and I'm impressed by the things that you offer that I think really help the kids in practice and puts them in a position to be more successful in the games. I know there's a couple of organizations that you're working with across the country, and you're very, very popular at camps because you just got a great personality, a great way of communicating with kids, as well as your resume and your pedigree speaks for itself. Where can people go to see you or maybe find out about where you're going to be? Are there some organizations that they should at least keep their eye on?
Yeah. I mean, as you said, I'm pretty fortunate to be with the company that I am for work. And, you know, I work for STX and again, I just consider myself lucky every day, you know, to be able to play this game still and be able to coach and do all the things that I get to do and be a part of STX is pretty awesome. You know, I'm fortunate enough to be a promo player for the company as well. So, you know, we do a lot of events around the country, you know, doing different clinics. And a lot of times we're just doing volunteer clinics throughout. You know, this month we'll actually be down in Miami in 2 weeks down for that tournament. We're going to be down doing a clinic down there and working with one of the local vendors down there, retailers down there, and doing a clinic. So we'll be down there coming up in a couple weeks, and again, doing multiple things for them. Also, obviously, doing some Ohio State camps this summer. And, you know, obviously I'll be playing with the Chicago Machine again this summer. So if anyone's up in that that area, I'm always looking to do different stuff and love helping out kids and talking to kids after games and answering questions, any of that stuff. You know, it's always great. And then I do multiple Game Breaker camps around the country, doing a couple down in Florida this summer. Be doing one in Tampa in June and one down in Fort Myers area in July. And then something I actually have going on, which I'm really excited about, with one of my very close friends, Greg Bice, who's also an alumni of Ohio State, who's in the same class as me, and we were fortunate enough to play out in L.A. with the L.A. Riptide together, and now we're fortunate enough to still be playing in Chicago. We started a little company of ours called Resolute Lacrosse, so that's something that we're doing on the side. And we're running right here in Ohio right now and looking to branch out and do multiple things around the area. And kind of our philosophy there, it's pretty exciting, looking to kind of attack all these kids. You know, we're both big believers in playing multiple sports, you know, for kids to get out and do multiple things in the fall and the winter. But there are a lot of kids out there that really aren't doing sports in the fall. So what we're trying to do is offer some elite training for these kids during that fall session and get them out with strength coaches and speed coaches, and we're working through and doing multiple things and, you know, targeting these elite players in the area and really working on focusing on getting these guys to play against one another and really kind of work as a group. And it's been really, really successful, and we're really excited about the response that we've gotten from our players, and, you know, really hoping that some more kids are really going to follow this and jump in the mix here. So, again, that's called Resolute Lacrosse, and our website is resolutelacrosse.com.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
So,
well, listen, let me just tell you again how much I appreciate you joining us on the air. This is Anthony Kelly, known as the A-Train, and I wouldn't want him running me with the ball, I'll tell you that. I hope you gain some insights, the back-to-back drill, the butt-end wars, the wrecking ball, talking about the wing play, just really, really good stuff. And we wish you and the folks at Ohio State the best. And the Ohio State camps are prominently displayed on their website if you want to go there, in addition to Resolute. And, Anthony, thank you so much for joining us, man. Appreciate it so much.
Hey, thanks a lot. Yeah, just two quick things. I mean, yeah, the Ohio State, that's at ohiostatebuckeyes.com. And, you know, we have multiple camps every level there. And, you know, I'm always happy to answer any questions. If anybody wants to reach out to me directly, feel free to shoot me an email. My email address is anthonyk@stx.com. So AnthonyK@stx.com.
I'm pretty sure I saw that in the men's room the other day.
Yeah, quite possibly. So, but yeah, feel free. You know, shoot me an email, or if you have any of your kids that have direct questions, you know, feel free to have them reach out to me, and I'm more than happy to help out whenever I can.
Well, and special thanks to our close friend Chris Gallagher from Ohio, who introduced me to Anthony, and I got to have dinner with him with some guys and get to know him as a person. Quality guy, great lacrosse player, and clearly on his way to being a great coach. And thank you for the tips. This is Coach Mike on LaxCoachMike.com. Until next time, thank you so much.